You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome Lucia Renee back to the show. Lucia has been a professional actress, a computer science consultant, and since publishing her book, Unplugging the Patriarchy, a spiritual mentor. She has over 40 years of spiritual disciplines that culminated in a 17-year apprenticeship with Frederick P. Lenz, an enlightened master of American Buddhism, psychic development, and mysticism. As a highly trained mystic, Lucia is a walking encyclopedia of the mystical arts, a master of navigating alternate dimensions. As a mystical stalker, she can ferret out the root of your problem, and as a dreamer, she can mentor you how to dream a more refined life and ultimately dissolve the dream to move into formlessness. As a manifester, she can conceive of something, then magically allow it to come into form. She empowers through many forms and brings the most enlightened beings into our awareness via teleconferences. You can find out more at www.luciarenee.com or find her on Facebook under her name. This coming July 7th through 10th is a rare opportunity to meet Lucia and others in a San Francisco workshop at the Treasure Trove of Transformation Intensive. It's a three-day workshop that is certain to be empowering, so don't miss it. So let's welcome Lucia to the show now. Hi, Lucia. How are you?
I'm good, Lance. How are you?
I'm good.
So, it's nice to be back.
Yes. Well, it's been such a long time that I realized that your biography on BBS needs to be updated, so I'm going to have to get some more current information for you. We shouldn't have allowed so much time to pass. But what is time?
Yeah, exactly. We'll handle that. That's just logistics.
Exactly. Well, you know, as I was reading the bio that I had written before, you mentioned alternate dimensions in there, and I've noticed that so many people seem to be thinking linearly and somewhat unconsciously of how dimensions work, and it seems to be tied up also with the concept of time and space, which is a limitation that our minds have difficulty moving out of. And of course, those who are on the front lines know that there are infinite dimensions and that the parallel dimensions and so on. So some of the front runners, such as yourself, are exploring many different dimensions and higher ones in particular that are not subject to the matrix. I thought maybe tonight we could talk a little bit about that and about your views on it and how you see it from your experience.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic and a timely one, as you say. From my experience, I guess I'll just start historically. How I trained, how I became multidimensional, because I worked with, as you said in the introduction, a teacher for 17 years, and he was extremely multidimensional. And we never talked about multidimensionality. Because it's really not something one needs to grasp mentally. It's something purely experiential. Mm-hmm. So his way of opening his students to other dimensions was to primarily, the method he used was to take them out to the desert, sort of a la Castaneda.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And he would just open up dimensions, and every once in a while he would stop and say, I've just taken you through 100 dimensions in the last hour. That's why you may be feeling a bit out of your body. And that's about the only reference we ever had to dimensions. And many years later, everybody's talking about dimensions along with the ascension. And I'm going, wow, what's the big what's the big fuss about, right? But I have been pondering it more because I realize after many years of working on myself, I am able to help other people do the same, just as my teacher helped me. And it's caused me to really scrutinize, well, what am I doing? What are the mechanics of what I am doing? And that's what I thought we could talk about today. I mean, for me, I don't quantify if I have gone into the 11th or the 12th dimension, nor do I care what the difference in those two are. And it's actually, sometimes I think, well, I understand that some people like to research and analyze and quantify things. The goal, it seems to me, or the game that we're playing here on this game board is becoming more and more multidimensional, or becoming, you could say, more and more acclimated to a variety of dimensions, increasing the number of dimensions you have access to. That's one way of talking about it. So the question that's most important for me is not how to differentiate them or quantify them, but how do we do it? How do you introduce somebody to their multidimensionality? How do you help them expand compressed places in their awareness field? How do you help them navigate into and make permanent those other dimensions in consciousness? So I've been tapping in a bit to George Kavassalis. Do you know him?
Well, yes. In fact, we go way back, and when he was writing his book, I think it was called Our Universal Journey, his editor, the one that was going to edit the book, dropped out, and I offered to do the editing on that book, and he and Cynthia called me and said, we'd really like you to do it. And then I accepted, and he said, well, there is a catch. You've only got 2 weeks before our deadline. And so I was up 24/7 editing his book, which is an incredible piece of work. And I got to see it firsthand and experience the ideas and work with them and rewrite them, so to speak. Without affecting anything else. So yes, I love George.
Yeah, I'm really impressed, and he gives a very fascinating description of multidimensionality. Or maybe I'm making an assumption. Let me tell you what my assumption is. You tell me if you agree. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, because he talks a lot about the compression, how this planet and this universe is all compacted or compressed down. And when I read that, I thought, wow, this is the first time I have ever read what might be a plausible description of multidimensionality. Because when you open up a portion of yourself that has been compressed down, that would logically increase your multidimensionality, no? And so reading his book recently and watching some of his YouTubes and listening to him explain that theory, that he, you know, obviously it's not intellectual for him. He's navigated these places. Yeah, that's the thing that's fascinating. It just, I've been pondering it a lot, and it caused me to say, well, how... Yeah, that would be an explanation of what multidimensionality is, and how is it that I'm doing that? Because I know that I am. So let me take a step backwards and describe what I do when I do an empowerment, or what I call a transmission of light, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so I'm sitting with a group of people and we're meditating and we do an open eye meditation. And I make eye contact with each person. Right now I'm doing, as you mentioned, Treasure Trove of Transformation. So that's four evenings in a row of empowerments or transmissions of light.
Wow.
So four times I'm connecting with someone and we make eye contact. And if the person is sensitive, if the person is doesn't have too much emotional baggage,
mm-hmm.
if their third eye is a little bit opened or they have a little bit of psychic ability, then they can see right away, or perhaps with the accumulation of days, they can see that the room fills up with golden light.
Mm.
Whenever you see gold light, that's the light of what they call classically the supraconscious, meaning that which is beyond this normal level of consciousness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the color is always gold. It's extremely refined
mm-hmm.
and otherworldly. And you know you're not seeing a light show, you know,
mm-hmm.
that someone is doing on the stage. You know that there's something very unusual going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely seductive. It's beautiful to just sit there and steep in it.
Mm.
So often what people describe is when eye contact is made, they describe a tunnel of light that forms between myself and themselves, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what I realized is I am actually transferring at that point different dimensions to them, because each empowerment is different. One is done, one is the Divine Mother, one is the Syrian High Council, where we go in, it's very, very technical, where we reboot the person's original starseed configuration to its original, right? They, we
mm-hmm.
reboot it. And the last one is the angelic realms.
Mm.
And so I think when you teach someone multidimensionality, when you expose them to multidimensionality, you're really opening something up for them. It's sort of like if we wanted to take a vacation and go to London, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know London at all. And then we had a friend in London, and they said, no problem, I'll show you around London. Yeah?
Right, good.
And then the next time you go to London, you don't need a guide because
right.
you know the tube, you know the pound, how to convert your money. You have a sense of how to navigate in London.
Right.
So I think it's exactly the same with dimensions. Once you open someone up to those dimensions, and that's happening during one of my transmissions of light, because in this golden tunnel of supraconscious light, you can transmit. It's like it rides through it's like a train going through the tunnel, right?
Uh-huh.
So the dimensionality goes through this passage, and it hits the person's subtle physical body, and it causes a remembrance of the angelic realms, of their original starseed configuration, whatever,
mm-hmm.
yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And that's like having a tour guide to London. It's a tour guide to different dimensions from the angelic realms or from the Syrian realms, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And so once a person has that initial introduction, the beauty of it is they can navigate back there by themselves. They don't need me, or
right.
they don't need someone else, right?
Yes, yes, I like that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And that's one way of talking about what we're doing, and that's why I found George's book so interesting is to say we are simply accessing more and more dimensionality. In other words, opening up more and more of those compacted solar systems, planets, universes, galaxies, right? All the things that have been compacted down into us in a human form.
Right.
Yeah, so the more you open up, as soon as you open up everything, you're done with the playing field. There's no reason to be here anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So all of that, what we perceive as being outside of ourselves, the vast areas of creation and beyond, the different, the dimensions that are not marked with labels, you're now leaving the 12th dimension or you're entering the 125th, leaving the thousands, those things don't exist. And so it seems as if what you're saying is that the vastness that we are, which is limited by our ideas and beliefs about being a physical body or a certain career or our choices and our lifestyle, vanishes because we are all that is. We're opening
to... Yeah, exactly.
To,
yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so it's only important to the logical mind to quantify it, and there's no problem with doing that.
Right.
But you know, in there is this thing called nirvikalpa samadhi, right?
Uh-huh.
Nirvikalpa samadhi is a very, there are various samadhis that are described in primarily in Hindu and Buddhist literature. And nirvikalpa samadhi is when the meditation deepens to such an extent that you drop into source itself.
Mm.
And the personal self completely goes away.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
The personal self is eradicated for 2-3 hours, 2-3 days, whatever the duration is. And the body stops breathing, right? It's like you're dying while in the body, while still in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience, there's no memory left whatsoever. So back in, oh God, I think it was 2006, I went into nirvikalpa samadhi for the first time for like 3 hours. And there was the first hour of my meditation was every being that I trusted, my teacher who had left the body, Ramana Maharishi, various teachers, the Divine Mother came to me. And they were all trying to talk me into letting go completely. And the concern was, well, what if I can't swallow? I mean, it was very physical, very bodily. You know, what happens if I lose control of my bladder while I'm sitting here?
Right,
you know, there are things to be considered. And so they would pacify and pacify. And I kept letting go more and more. And finally, my teacher was in the subtle physical sitting behind me and almost had me strapped in, you know?
Wow.
So that I couldn't move. And the final thing that happened was that the Divine Mother came in and she said, "Will you trust me?" And I said, "Yes, you I would trust," right? Everybody else can try to talk me into it, but you I would trust. And what happened was, and I my mind immediately jumped in and said, she's going to touch me on the forehead and I'll go away or whatever. But instead, she prostrated in front of me.
Huh.
And it shocked me to such an extent that it happened. I left. It was like such a non sequitur that the Divine Mother would prostrate in front of you, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And it literally scared me to death. and I left, and I was in nirvikalpa samadhi for 3 hours. And
wow.
The other people who were in the room, you know, when I came back, they said, "Wow, it was just like sitting with our teacher. We could have sat here forever." You know, that's the way the superconscious feels. It's so beautiful.
Huh.
It's like time and space go away, and you're home, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, of course, that's not an ending. That's something that, in my experience, and from talking to Leslie Temple Thurston, who went into nirvikalpa samadhi many times because she woke up like 30 years ago, it's no longer really necessary to do that because the energies that we're experiencing on the planet are so much more refined at this point. It's so much more equalized. In other words, our normal consciousness is so much more, if you want to use a hierarchical term, elevated, right? That it's no longer necessary to completely stop thought and go away in nirvikalpa samadhi. it's possible to enter into what you would call the lower samadhis, which are very, very high, you know, filled with gold light, very, very still, very, very quiet. If you can do that repeatedly, I think, then enlightenment can occur. And enlightenment doesn't necessarily occur because you've gone into Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Because when I came out of Nirvikalpa Samadhi, I was hugely empowered. But it also kicked up everything of my ego that remained that needed to be addressed. And I worked for 4 more years before I actually, in my case, you know, grace at some point descends and there is a full awakening. But that's not something that our personal self can do.
Right, right, right.
So the personal self says, oh, I want enlightenment. I want to be fully awakened. But it's that. A non sequitur, because the personal self has to go away in order
right.
for that to happen. Yeah.
And doesn't that create quite a bit of fear for most people that that they'll lose their individuality, even though by losing yourself you gain yourself?
Yes, that's the whole trick. It's the fear of dissolution of the personal self, because the body immediately steps in and says, "I'm going to die."
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
No matter how many times you reassure it, it still, it has a survival mechanism that says, whoa, I don't want to go.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes. And it'll drop you right out of any of those higher states. In fact, it will be it and your experiences can drop you back into another incarnation if you're not careful.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and there's no problem with that because
right.
we're here to play. And it doesn't matter how long it takes. It doesn't matter if we want to take it slowly or quickly or whatever. But it is true that whatever you focus on, you become.
Yes.
I have found. Yeah?
Yes.
So whatever you set, the personal self, and it's really not the personal self. It gets filtered down through the personal self. And it's like a higher proclivity that comes through that says, yes, I want full awakening. That's the only thing that matters to me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If that's the case, then you get it in this lifetime, another lifetime, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very beautifully said. And then also that our focus is our energy of consciousness. So if we're focusing in one direction where our attention is going out, we're losing our consciousness. Whereas if you have an observer. And the arrow goes both ways, where you're seeing or observing from an observation point, then you also have awareness at the level of the observer. And from the observer, when it's reinforced when it's encouraged to be in the now and is more awake and continuous, can become the master.
Mm.
But then all of that is like... It seems as if it takes forever, and yet it has already happened. So, you know, it seems that a lot of effort is required to be attentive and mindful and to be aware of one's consciousness. But also, after you pass a certain point, it's as if it was already done.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. At least that's my experience. It's not... here's the thing. Most people, and it's only because I think we've grown up in and had, I mean, I'm talking multiple lifetimes, in a patriarchal society, right?
Oh,
which has taught us to seek outward for completion or fulfillment, right? That's so heavily wired into us and probably, you know, a part of the matrix. I've been talking and dealing a lot with the matrix lately. So that's hardwired in.
Yes.
And it's exactly the opposite of what one needs to do if one wants to bring online their multidimensionality to awaken totally. Because really, it's very, very simple. One only needs to bring the mental body to rest and bring the emotional body to rest. Those are the two active monkeys in the tree, right, that need to be calmed down.
Yes.
Because once that happens, and I think that's what you're saying, the observer can be there online, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're clearing away the unconscious those parts of us that are unconscious. We may want enlightenment consciously, but there may be a tremendous amount of terror in the unconscious about that, or about losing the embodiment, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So those two things are at odds, and they fight each other, and people wonder, oh, well, I've set this as my intent. Why am I not getting it with anything, right? Simple or complex. And it's because there are things in the unconscious that are counteracting the conscious intent.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's kind of like the Titanic that hit the iceberg. The part that you see is probably the part that we would consider ourselves to be conscious of, and yet the iceberg gets larger and larger like a pyramid, and it's an unknown, because we don't see it in the sea of unconsciousness. And that's where the manipulations can occur and agreements made that we're not aware of. Just in the daily process of life, watching movies, looking on the internet, and so on and so forth, we're making thousands of agreements and choices in each moment, most of them unconscious. So the way to leave that, or to be aware of that, is to shed light on our unconsciousness and bring it into the conscious field. And the problem that occurs is if there is a lot of deep, dark shadow that we haven't yet processed and cleared, or even are aware of, it has become fragmented and stuffed, and many people are completely unconscious or unaware of that aspect and do not want that to come up because of guilt, fear, and judgment, morality.
Right.
And so that adds an additional spin to what's going on, and as far as keeping one's intentions from manifesting from the conscious realm.
Yeah, well said. You've looked into this, obviously.
Just a bit.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's all fear-based, isn't it?
Everything is absolutely. Fear-based. Yeah, and that's the method of control in the Matrix, or, as you say, the patriarchy still is, it's not just plugging along. It has made tremendous progress since your incredible book, Unplugging from the Patriarchy. And we're moving into what appears to be a future, transhumanism and nanotechnology and cloning and, bilocation and different things. But it's already happened. And those who are aware at the control system level, they just put on a dog and pony show for the human creation, and then we're encouraged to be kept asleep by all these different belief systems and structures, which are designed to do so. So it's becoming more difficult, I think, in a sense, and yet in the difficulty, the squeezing is also maybe becoming more easy as you become denser. You know, you reach a point where that you're just about to convert into a diamond. And some people might make it, and some people might not. If you can bear the heat long enough, and then the freedom is, you are not that, and yet you are. And the future looks both bright, and it looks very dark at the same time.
Well, I don't. I'm not worried about it. I just think something.
No, I'm not either.
Yeah, something is going to. It will take care of itself in a way that it's not going to involve us personally.
Personally, right.
Yeah. So, but I love what you're saying. That everything is there. The diamond is there. It's just in the rough, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So everything is there inside, and when everything finally does fall away, then you're left with what you began with, which is pure awareness. It's ultra simple.
Yes.
So everything we have ever sought, everything we seek is there. It's just obscured by all the things that you were mentioning. So it's just a matter of moving away, burning through, digging down into the debris, right? And getting rid of it. That's the mental and the emotional baggage, the egoic structure, all the defenses, all the protections. So nothing has changed, really, in terms of the way one does that. It's just the clarification. That's the way I like to say it.
Yeah,
the clarification or the purification of one's being, stripping everything away to get down to just pure essence, pure witness.
Yes, and it, with the cell phones and all the busyness of life that goes on, it does make it a little tricky for some people to do that, but it can be instantaneous. You can instantaneously shift out of all that, as you know, and that's what you appear to be doing, is empowering people to make that shift, which is instant. It occurs in no time, and you are then outside of the physicality or the atoms and molecules that spin around in your body, and you are all that is in the field that in which those things are held.
It's true that what you've just said is true, but I had, and I think most people have, an idea of what that's like, what that's going to be like, or what that's going to feel like.
Uh-huh.
And I know for myself, I would think, because I would look at my teacher who was fully enlightened, and I would say, he's in bliss all the time, and he knows everything. He never makes a mistake, right?
Right.
Everything he says is God's word, and if I just follow, and if I model myself on him, if I become like him, that's the way to enlightenment, yeah?
Right.
And nothing could have been further from the truth.
The truth.
Because it's really about becoming yourself.
Right.
Not like somebody else. I mean, he modeled enlightenment via his personal self, and it outplayed, in one fashion, Leslie Temple Thurston 30 years ago, woke up, and she outpictures it very, very differently. I've been privileged to know a number of fully enlightened people, and everybody outpictures it differently.
Uh-huh.
So it's a matter of owning who you are. And the other point that I'd like to reference that you just said is, it is, I forget the word that you used. It's like you are everything, right? Completely expanded. You are everything. You are universal consciousness.
Right.
And that's true, but it's always anchored. That's true. That's the one way I think that you can tell. You achieve that, and it's there 24/7, and it doesn't go away, because it's possible to achieve that and then slip out of it.
Oh, right? Yes.
Yeah. So in Zen, they call that a satori, and I've done that. You know, I've had an entire week where my heart was so open and life was so beautiful, back in my 20s, for God's sake.
Ah.
You know, and I thought, oh, this is it. This is full awakening, and it's just a week. And then you go right back down into the sewer.
Yes. I wish I had a penny for every time that happened. And then it's like, what happened? Where did I go? And I can remember one period that lasted 10 years when I was asleep. And what woke me up was a walk on the San Francisco beach at night with my dog, looking up at the stars. And we had walked a bit, and I wanted to sit down, and there was a log there, and I sat. And I realized that some dog had put his poopy there. And so I sat in the poop, and for some reason, it shocked me into awareness. And I got up, and I was laughing, and I looked at the stars, and I thought, oh, my God, I have been asleep for 10 years. What happened? Oh. And the voice in my head said, yes, and every moment of that 10 years was necessary for you to arrive here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the bitch of it, isn't it?
Yes, sitting in the shit.
It's true. It just, I mean, those moments, however long in duration, they kick up whatever else needs to be process through. That's all.
Yeah.
And you have to process through everything. And finally, you get to the point where you have processed almost everything. And then you live, as my teacher used to call it, in enlightened states of mind. You're not enlightened. But
right.
Life is really, really nice. And if it
right.
didn't get any better, you could endure the rest of the incarnation that way, right?
Yes.
But then the moment comes and grace ascends.
Yes.
Descends. And then it doesn't go away, right?
Yes.
Well, I assume. It's been 6 years now for me, so maybe those are my famous last words. It doesn't, the sense of universal expansion or awareness is 24/7 and it doesn't go away. And also the way that you can tell, I think, is that you no longer yearn for it. It's like if
right.
you've been away on vacation for a long time and then you yearn to go home. Oh, just to be home would be
mm-hmm.
so sweet, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And you yearn to go home and you yearn to go home and you're still traveling, but finally you get home. And then you don't yearn to go home anymore because you are home. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's the other way I think you know, is that
yeah.
the yearning that causes us to step onto the spiritual pathway in the beginning and to keep going forward, to keep seeking, to keep yearning for completion,
mm-hmm.
that drops. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, it would have to, wouldn't it?
Yeah, of course.
But the
point I guess I wanted to make was that it is ultra, ultra simple. It's not that you are omnipresent and omniscient. Anything
mm-hmm.
that you need to know on a need-to-know
mm-hmm.
basis, you can find out, right?
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that you know everything, or intellectually, certainly, and that doesn't mean that you never make mistakes.
Right.
Harder, right?
Right, absolutely.
I mean, there's still this personal self. It's very, very personal. You still sit down at your computer and you answer emails. You still get frustrated with an employee, whatever
mm-hmm.
it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's still, life still is playing out. It's just that the drama goes away because the egoic structure has gone away. There's nothing left to react very much.
Right,
yeah?
Right.
Yeah. So it's just very, very quiet. And anytime you close your eyes, you go, oh, wow. Yeah, it's here. It's still here. It's complete expansion. It's universality.
Yeah.
But it's the combination of those two that's so bizarre. I mean, that is the fruition of the experiment in consciousness.
Yeah.
Realizing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the paradox is obvious, because if we can hold the paradox, that seems to enable us, I suppose that that's a form of multidimensional thought outside of the mind, that it allows us to enjoy a more extended period of that kind of awareness, that you're holding the paradox of the smaller self and also that of the universal consciousness at the same time.
Yeah, but I would point you to one word, yeah?
That.
Holding.
Ah, oh, okay.
Well, but that's what our mind thinks we need to hold ourselves
on,
in
yes.
a certain
right.
configuration, or I need to hold on to this sense of expansion or this new sense of multidimensionality. But that's where we come back and bite ourselves.
Right. When I've tried to do that, and I thank you for pointing that out, the more I try to hold on to something or cling to it that is a wonderful expansion, the more it recedes and leaves me.
Yeah.
It's like trying to grab water, and you can't. And so the harder you squeeze, the more you squeeze out of your hand. So what I love about what you're saying is that so many people that are on the front lines and teaching different systems, or they've developed complex things that you must do and know. You have to know this and you have to know that, and you've got to go to the 12th dimensional such and such, and then you have to do something else. I've always felt that the ultimate truths are the simplest, and that a baby should be able to do it, A child should be able to do it without any awareness of knowledge or things that are necessary to do or learn.
Yeah. It's mental masturbation.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And it's actually a distraction. It's actually a protective device that the ego puts in place that says, you don't want to go there for real. Let's just think about this. Let's quantify it.
So
it's actually a defense.
Yes, yes.
I'm sorry to be blunt.
No, that's absolutely right. I agree with you totally.
Yeah.
I like it when you're blunt because that's how I grasp the truth. That's how I validate that somebody is speaking truthfully when they are being blunt. Because I like that. I like the there-ness of the information. It's just, this is how it is. And it's not complicated, and it's not, you don't have to jump through hoops, and you don't have to graduate from some kind of metaphysical school or anything like that. It's
right.
But being empowered is necessary at some point.
Right.
And that's what we're talking about, is how do we become empowered if we're sincerely intent? And it takes a lot of effort and sincerity to get beyond all of the things that we've just been talking about, to actually do it.
Yeah. Okay, I want to make one point, because I love what you said about the water in the hand, right?
Uh-huh.
And just to cap off that subject, the only constant in this world is change.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we can't hold on to a high experience, because immediately it morphs, it changes.
Yes.
Everything is fluid, right?
Yes.
So it's the necessity of just being in the moment. There's a lot of conversation now about being in the moment, and it's right on the money.
Yes.
That's all there is, and everything is constantly changing. And so there will be days that you feel good, and there will be days that you feel down, even if you're totally awake.
Yes.
That doesn't change, because the physical body is still present, and there's still interaction with the world, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah. But the way, now coming back to what you said, when you moved along from that, how do we do it? Because that's what fascinates me.
Mm-hmm.
How do I help people do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so we've been talking about one aspect of it in depth, which is clarifying the being, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's bringing the mental body to rest, and I always suggest doing that through meditation. You just learn to still the mind using a technique that resonates for you. But
mm-hmm.
that's always the goal of meditation, is to stop thought, or
mm-hmm.
To slow thought down, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then you use processing, what we normally call processing, to eradicate the blockages or the egoic baggage,
mm-hmm.
yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So you bring the emotional body down to
mm-hmm.
rest. And that's the very personal, quiet, individual work that needs to happen.
Yeah. Yes.
But then the other way, and then you can intend. Certainly a person can intend, I want to increase my multidimensionality. I want to explore my universality. I want, and set intents or have the desire to increase one's capacity. But the other component in that is simply hanging out with people who have access to more multidimensionality. That's the way you learn more quickly. It's like if you want to learn to play tennis, you can get out there and start hitting the ball around.
Right.
And maybe you do okay.
Right.
But if you hire a coach, they're going to teach you how to hold the racket and you know, make contact with the ball. And it's going to be much more efficient, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that the tennis coach is a better person. It doesn't mean that they're special in any way.
Right.
It just means they have knowledge of something that you don't, that you want to learn.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, so that's it, because that's like the trip to London. It's like if you hang out with someone who has access to more multidimensionality, and actually, technically, because I've been looking at this, the thing that destabilizes people is not exposure to multidimensionality. It's flipping through dimensions really, really fast.
Huh.
That's what discombobulates people. And it's necessary. That's another, it's like a more advanced aspect. It's like, okay, we want to open up the dimension, to use the analogy we've been using of London. Yeah, let's just pretend that's the name of a dimension or an angelic dimension. We want to open up those dimensions, and that's fine. A person can go into that dimension and they can become friends with that dimension. They can get to know it. And then it opens up that compressed component of themselves and they own it. Yeah, so now I can navigate back to it. Now it's part of the configuration that is me and my universal self, right?
Right.
But the real challenge is flipping between them. It's the ability to stand in multiple dimensions and not know which dimension is which.
Yeah. Yeah?
And that is exactly what you were driving at when you said the water in the hand. It's like you can't hold on to any one dimension. You can't be attached to any one dimension. They have to just flow in and out in a very formless way. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Very beautifully said.
Yeah, but that destabilizes people. It's interesting. Because if somebody, like if somebody comes, if I have one of my apprentices, I have a couple of young apprentices, and if one of them comes to visit me in Ecuador and they hang out with me for a month, as one of them did recently, they go through a lot of stuff. You know, they have a lot of emotional process that comes up, and, you know, they're over in my little guest house working on themselves, and I'm not even aware of it. Mm-hmm. But it's just because we've sat the night before and watched a movie together. We just hung out.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
And it's and because I can flip through dimensions, it creates a situation where they're flipping through dimensions and it's like, whoa, 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 wait, I've got to go and stabilize, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely.
So it's via association. That's the fastest way to learn multidimensionality.
Yes. Yes. Very well said. That's the other aspect that, you know, the mind thinks that we have to do things or do something, and yet, as you just said, you can just be, and you are doing it. It's happening as a result of what you've done, you know, maybe prior or in the future, and it affects everyone around us.
Yeah.
It literally moves the consciousness in the field in which we are, and you could be walking through a grocery store and awaken everybody for a moment, maybe. Or they might have, you know, each person will have their own experience of whatever it is, but when we are in that state, it empowers who knows how many or how that expands out into the universe to affect everything. I think it's pretty much infinite, but it does have an immediate effect, as you noticed, with the people that stay with you. And you could just be watching a movie and you're just going through all these dimensions, and then all of a sudden, you know, oh, I got to process this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, we're trying to get you to come to San Francisco. Would you like to do that?
I would love to, and I'm going to attempt to do it.
Oh, good.
And I'll write to you, and we'll see what we can do about that. Like, I would love to meet you in person and spend that time, and especially after, you know, hearing you talk about the process. And there are other people that are going to be there, too. Is David Manning going to be there?
Yeah. So David Manning does beautiful work. I mean, I know you've interviewed him. And
he's incredible.
He does these amazing kind of stories, weaves stories together and uses sacred sounds. And it goes through your being and just shakes things loose.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal.
I love David. He's just amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
I'm so thankful that you brought him into my awareness. And who else will be at the event?
Yeah, he's one of the presenters, as is my good friend Susan Gash, who also, she's an American, but she also lives here in Ecuador. And she's very interesting. She's a true healer, and she works as a healer with a team of healers in alternate dimensions. And she also does dowsing, so she's got that very technical edge.
Oh, nice.
But the really soft, healing, nurturing personality, you know, on the exterior. And so she does one of the afternoon sessions. David does one of the afternoon sessions. And then I do in the evenings empowerments where we just laugh and, you know, go into the golden light.
Oh, boy, that sounds so wonderful. I really could use that, too. It's just about time. So, yeah, it just sounds incredible. I haven't met Susan Gash yet, but I would love to. And, in fact, I have her scheduled for a show in about a month. So I'll find out more about her.
Yeah, she's very special.
Yeah. Well, everybody that you're associated with seems to be very special.
Yeah, I'm fortunate to meet really interesting people like yourself, Lance. I always have loved you.
Well, thank you. The feeling is mutual.
So, we're doing San Francisco in July, as you said, 7 through 10. And then we're doing London in October. And we've timed them to be right after the solstices and the equinoxes because, this year there are just these huge clicks that are happening into a whole different playing field.
Yeah.
Each time there's a solstice or an equinox, we're clicking.
Yes.
And I was doing some dowsing with Susan the other day, and we were looking at how complete this particular phase of the ascension is. And I think what we got was 87%, something like that, complete.
Wow.
And it will be a little more complete after the summer solstice and then the fall equinox, and it'll be 100% complete as of the December solstice. So meaning this phase of the ascension, there have been other ascensions in the past, there will be other ascensions in the future, but we have this incredible boost. It's like a rocket taking off this year, where if we apply ourselves to our spiritual practice, to our whatever it is we intend, whatever we really want out of this incarnation, we can go so much more quickly and efficiently. So my big message this year is not to waste this time, to take full advantage of the energetic configuration of this year. Yeah.
Yes.
And we wanted to time these events just after solstice and equinoxes, because then we would have time to assess what is the new playing field and then discuss it at the next event.
So, wow. That's beautiful. very nice, very nice. That's a wonderful, wonderful concept, and I just can't imagine people not wanting to, you know, participate in this because, you know, so many have been going on and on for years with the New Age movement at first and all the research and then dipping down into the conspiracies and then coming back up for air and then creating intentional lives, and this seems to be a perfect opportunity to grasp the moment and allow ourselves to go through something that could, you know, catapult us out of this dimension. And I hear a lot of people talking about, well, I'm just so ready to be out of this dimension or this reality or whatever. Well, this is the opportunity, right?
The thing that's so beautiful from my side, what my most favorite thing at the moment is just showing someone their own divinity, right? Showing it's like when the room fills with gold light, you always have to point out to people because there's a tendency then to project authority. Oh, you're special, right? The gold light comes through and you can fill the room with gold light.
Right.
And that's not why you do it.
Right.
You do it because then at the end you say, okay, this experience that you had, this breakthrough where you just finally, after three nights, you actually saw for the first time the gold light, that's you. That's what you're seeing. That's your own divinity. You're seeing what everything in creation is made up of at a subtle level, right?
Wow, beautiful.
And once you have that experience, you can't go back.
Right. That does seem to be a major turning point opportunity.
Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of people sit and they just cry. Mm-hmm. It's like it's so mm-hmm. beautiful to come into a full recognition. Oh, this is who I am. I've mm-hmm. always known this. I've always had this deep-seated feeling that it was this simple. It was mm-hmm. this pure. It was mm-hmm. this beautiful. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's so, for me, because I just observe. I mean, I sit there and the light can come through really strongly only because I have divested myself of ego, egoic structure and emotional baggage, right? Mm-hmm. So there's just a circuit there and the light can come through and flow through freely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And other than being that circuit, I simply observe what happens, and it's the most exquisite job to sit there and watch people, awaken to a new degree. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that must be quite just blissful to be in that energy and know, you know, like you said, that people are being empowered and that they'll never have to lose that power of recognizing, you know, themselves, finally.
Other than it will change constantly, right?
Well, yes, right. And we'll fall back into, you know, the small self, and we'll make mistakes and fall on our feet and continue to, you know, trudge along. But, you know, those moments are unforgettable. Uh-huh. They're like pearls on a string that is knotted so that, you know, if the pearl string, the strand of pearls breaks, you only lose one pearl. You don't lose them all.
Mm. Mm. But I'll tell you, my absolute favorite is the Syrian High Council, because they are so, so techie.
Oh, I can enjoy that.
I mean, what happens is I sit there. It's the most extraordinary experience. I sit there and I make eye contact, and it's become clear to me after doing two of these empowerments that my job is simply to hold the person's gaze so that I stabilize a six-dimensional, because the Syrians are very dissolved. They're six-dimensional. They're pretty formless, right?
Right.
And I have to calibrate. I have to help the person with whom I'm having eye contact calibrate to the sixth dimension.
Right, right.
And once that happens, then the Syrians are standing behind me, and it's like watching three kaleidoscopes in the upper part of my body that all get tuned at the same time. And so there are literally hundreds of thousands of combinations that can result, right? And it's all of the original starseed information for that person. I have no idea how they do it. I can't possibly conceive of doing it, but I can sit there and be a circuit for it. Yeah.
Wow.
Then it lifts out of my crown chakra, or the top of my head, and goes over into the top of their head, and it filters. I can just watch it filtering down into the person and completely rebooting their system to something that's far closer to the original. Yeah.
Right. Right.
And then this bizarre thing was happening in Berlin, because the second time I did this empowerment, it was in Berlin, Germany in the spring. And I kept looking and I said, what are they doing? It's like they're putting a stamp on the person's forehead. What is that? And the only thing I could think of was, you know how you go in the grocery store in the States and they have like FDA approved?
Right. Hopefully not expires in 10 days.
Yeah, exactly. And I said, is this some kind of stamp or something? And then I got halfway through the room and there was a person who had been there for the first Syrian High Council empowerment. And suddenly they read the information that had been stamped into her forehead the first go-round. And so what they're doing is they're stamping, this is where this individual is at. This is what we've done this so far. This is the calibration that has occurred. This is how much they could take.
Right.
And it's like they encode the information in light on the person's forehead so that if they come again, then it can be read and they can give them the next dose.
Oh.
Yeah?
Wow.
Oh, it's absolutely fascinating. It's so technical.
Very interesting. Well, you know, Lucia, this is just an amazing conversation. This is we always have such a beautiful chats when we do our show together. And I just love the work you're doing, and I am going to be in touch with you about attending this. And we're just about out of time. And so if you want to mention your website and anything else, like, you know, about the upcoming energetic what you're doing in San Francisco. This would be a good time, and I just want to thank you so much for coming back. I just love you.
Oh, my goodness. I always love our chats, too. Yeah, my website is luciarenee.com, and I've just finished a series. That's the other thing I'd like to point out. It's a series of three YouTubes. At least the final YouTube will be there this coming weekend, we hope.
Wonderful.
And it's Ascension Game Changer, Exit and Unplug the Matrix, and Operation Clean Sweep. And it's very, very timely, so that if someone wants to withdraw their energies from the matrix, become more aware of how tied in we are to the matrix.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful set of three meditations, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. And where can they find those?
If they go to my website and look under library, and then they find the empowerments, they're always free. So they'll all be there hopefully this weekend or early next week. Yeah.
Wonderful. And then on Facebook, you also have a website or a presence there.
Yeah, just a page for Lucia Renee. Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, Lucia, it's been absolutely wonderful chatting with you, and I just feel moved, just moved. So...
always delighted, Lance. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And well, I'm sure we'll be emailing or chatting soon about the rest of the things. So much appreciated, Lucia.
Yeah. Take care.
All right. You too.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody. Good night, Lucia.